And there you heard Move It and Living Doll, two records which actually changed the life of Cliff Richard. And I'm so thrilled to say that the man's with me. Cliff, lovely to see you.
Hi, John. Yes, they did change my life. Certainly Move It. I mean, Move It actually was, I think, the first rock and roll record made outside the confines of the United States, because all our rock and roll came from there. All the really, truly great rock and roll singers were American. And Move It kind of got the ball rolling for the rest of the world, I think.
I can remember where I actually was when I first heard it. I was in a music shop on the Isle of Wight, and some guy came in and said, could he listen to Cliff Richard Move It? And the whole record shop sort of just stopped, you know. Yeah. He bought it, of course, and we all did, well, I think.
I think it surprised everyone. Even Hank Marvin, who later became my guitarist, when he talked to me, you know, once he'd become my guitarist, he said when they first heard Move It, they thought I was an American guy. And that when they were approached to play guitar for me, they were thrilled because they thought they were going to play for an American band. I think it was a surprise for everybody, including myself, because my second record wasn't anywhere near as good as that. Move It had a really good rock and roll sound, whereas High Class Baby sounded, again, we slipped back into a kind of English type of rock and roll, which is the kind of thing, I think Tommy Steele would forgive me for saying this, but the kind of thing that Tommy Steele did with Rock with the Caveman, you know, that kind of thing. And High Class Baby tended to sound a bit like that, and it wasn't until Living Doll again that I found my feet, so to speak, and started to get serious about things. And of course, Living Doll really did make changes again for me, because it introduced me to a whole new public, a kind of more adult public.
Going right back, when you're in Chess Hunt as a youngster, it was people like Teresa Brewer and Rosemary Clooney and Norman Wisdom, I know, who you particularly liked, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, one of the first records that we bought, I mean, I couldn't afford to buy those records, my mum did. I was just a kid at school, of course, but those were the records we heard. And Norman Wisdom did a lovely song called Don't Laugh at Me.
Lovely.
Because I'm a Fool, yeah. Really, really good song. And, of course, the singers of the time were Rosemary Clooney, Teresa Brewer, Bing Crosby, Perry Como, Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin. Really, really great singers. But as I've said so many times on my tours, it's strange to me that they, as fine as they were, didn't inspire me or my generation to be like them. It was when we heard Elvis. That's when we wanted to be singers. When we heard Jerry Lee Lewis and Little Richard and Buddy Holly and the Everly Brothers, Ricky Nelson. I mean, they're the ones that really inspired us. And I mean, I guess that's just the way music is. It's a very subjective thing. And it seemed like a whole generation of us were waiting for rock and roll to happen so that we could blossom as individuals, as potential artists.
Because your father won the pools, I think, and you bought a record player, was that right?
Yeah.
It wasn't a very big win, was it?
No, about £50 it was, and he had a choice. It was either a television or a record player, and my mum and I ganged up on him, and we voted 2-1 for a record player.
I know you started off in the Quintones, which was a harmony sort of group, wasn't it, really?
Yes, it was. We were a school group, and we sang at a couple of school parties, you know. And we formed it just because we were the fifth form, and we were friends together, and it was good fun, And that's how we did it. But it was never to be anything. It was literally just fun at school. And we weren't bad, I suppose. But what it did was, every time we did a little gig, I was expected to do my Elvis bit. And so I got a chance to sing a solo number, unaccompanied by the way. We used to sing a cappella. And I did used to do Heartbreak Hotel and, you know, Don't Be Cruel and stuff like that, you know. So it was a great chance for me to just sort of flex my vocal muscles a bit by myself.
You were into skiffle too, weren't you? The Dick Teague skiffle group, was it?
I joined the Dick Teague skiffle group after I'd left school. I was still desperate to sing and didn't seem to have an outlet. And then I met the girlfriend of a friend of mine. And she said, oh, Terry's in a skiffle group and they're looking for a singer. Anyway, I said I was interested, so she got him to call me and he did. He didn't call me by phone because we didn't have a phone, but he got round to me and said hello and said, come and have a sing with the band and see if they like you. Well, they did like me. But of course, you know, within a year, Terry and I were talking over a cup of coffee and we both decided that skiffle was not our first love, that rock and roll was our first love. And so we jointly decided that we'd leave the band and form our own group. And we just formed a three-piece group, me and another guy called Norman Mitham and another school friend of ours. And so two guitars and drums, there was no bass. Neither of us could play lead guitar at the time. So it was very much just a rhythm section, really, with a vocal, and that was it. But we got some good jobs, and we called ourselves the Drifters, of course, at the time.
Yes, a lot of people now come through holiday camp circuit. You did as well, didn't you? Of course, you were at a holiday centre, Butlins.
Yeah, my first professional engagement when I left my work, I was working in an office in Enfield at the time, and I worked there just about a year. And August the 9th, 1958, I turned professional, because I'd already made my record and I was waiting for it to be released. The release date was set for August 29th. So from the 9th to the 29th, I went to Butlins in Clacton and strummed my way through the month, desperately waiting for my record to come out. And, of course, it did, and it's history, actually. After that, we were very lucky, because I know a lot of artists can spend a number of years struggling away, playing hard, getting experience in all sorts of clubs and pubs and things, and then finally making it. But, you know, I was smiled upon, and my first record got to number two in the charts. And, of course, apart from anything else, I started at the right time. Jack Good was about to do Oh Boy. So there I was, the up-and-coming rock and roll singer. So he gave me an audition. I passed that. I did the first show. My first write-up in a newspaper didn't even mention my name. It said, Oh Boy burst onto our TV screens and seems to be basically a close-up of a young man chewing gum. I wasn't chewing gum at all. It was just the way I sang.